Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Tracy Kenney. Kenney is a writer, editor, journalist, and blogger. She is a graduate of the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. She worked for many years as a reporter and editor for such newspapers as the Post-Standard in Syracuse, the Watertown Daily Times, and the Oswego County Weeklies. In 2007, she found herself laid off from journalism work and ended up working for several years as a sales associate at a big box store. Kenney wrote and published a memoir about her experience in retail. It's called On Sale: Employers Get Good Workers Dirt Cheap. I welcome you to the show, Tracy. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you worked for 21 years as a journalist before spending several years in retail. Tell us how this transpired.
Well, I decided to take a buyout in 2007. I was at the Post Standard, and at that time, newspapers were beginning to sort of flounder and try to figure out what was the best way to attract readers, and there were changes. They were transitioning to online, more of an online report, and yet they were having trouble getting the advertising, so they were still trying to stick with print, and they were kind of confused about what way they wanted to go. And I was a little bit concerned about some of the changes that were going on, and I decided it was time for me to just take a step away. And ironically, I left journalism because I really love journalism, and I was concerned, and I thought, I may never work in the field again, but I'll just see what happens. And I ended up, a friend, his housemate, worked at the chain where I ended up working, and he said, well, you know, if worst comes to worst, I'm sure we can get you a job there. And so worst did come to worst, and I ended up going there. And in a way, it was a really wonderful experience because I met a really wonderful group of people.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We're going to talk about some of those people, too. Well, I want to know, did you have preconceived notions about Big Box and the workers there prior to working there? What were your thoughts?
Well, I had asked my friend about it a few years before because I said, you know, is this really, you hear in the media that these big box stores don't treat their employees right, and you just do hear all sorts of things. And I said, is that really true? Is that the experience working there? And he said, no, it's not that bad. And in some ways, it's not that bad. But in other ways, it can be worse. So it was sort of a surprise to me going into it exactly what had happened, and I wasn't really sure what people I would encounter. I really didn't know. And I ended up encountering a much more diverse group of people than I ever could have imagined, really more diverse in some ways than I had encountered at newspapers through the years.
I'll bet. That's interesting. Well, let's talk some of the specifics. There's something in the book that shocked me when you said that you often worked 6 days a week, didn't ever have time, weekends off. Tell us, how do they get away with that?
Well, they get away with it because they're cutting hours, and you know, you have to try to pick up whatever shift you can pick up. So you're not working 40 hours, but you're working 6 days a week, which wears you out.
Oh, yeah.
The labor laws are such that you can't work more than 6 hours without taking a lunch. And you do have to have breaks every 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And I think there might be some sort of law about how late you can work one night and how early you can come in the next. But if that's so, then they really push it. The stores really know how to push it and how to just barely stay within within the law. And they put the onus on the employees to remain legal. So if you're somehow mistakenly scheduled for a six-hour shift without a lunch, you're the one who has to run to the time clock before 6 hours to punch out. If you don't, and there's a possibility then that the store has violated law, the managers will call you in and will speak to you about it, and you will be disciplined for that. And if you do it a number of times, you'll be fired when you're not the one scheduling it. It's not your fault.
Yeah. Well, and you also talked about how hard it was to find managers if you had problems.
Yes, it
That's almost unbelievable that people can't even, you know, rectify some of the problems on the floor.
And sadly, I'm afraid it's way too common, and I'm afraid that it's becoming more common. It just seems that we're getting into more and more of a situation as the economy continues to have problems where it's an employer's market, And employers know that the market is saturated, you can always be replaced. And so workers aren't valued, they often aren't treated with respect, and it's really become a bad situation.
Oh, because absolutely.
It's bad for the workers, and ultimately it's bad for everyone. In a store, it's bad for the consumers, because I was amazed at how the workers were so dedicated. These people were getting treated not very well. They were not getting much money. They didn't have good benefits. And still, they really took care of their customers. They took care of each other, and they took care of their customers. They really cared about the work that they did.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're exhausted, you're not going to do as good of a job as you would if you were rested.
Yeah, and if you're treated abusively as well, which it sounds like it was the case quite often. You talk about the fact that it's discouraged for people to take sick days in these retail positions. Tell us about that. You were talking about people coming to work sick and throwing up. And
yes.
That's just amazing.
It is amazing. It really is.
Well, talk to us about what the philosophy is behind that.
The only thing I can imagine is that in some way it must be saving the company's money. You'd almost think that it wouldn't, because people would be so discouraged or not want to shop at a place like that. But somehow they must be saving money, and they come up with these really creative ideas, which I couldn't even imagine. You can take a sick day, and you take one day, and then if you don't take another day, that's counted against you as one day. But if you take one day and a second day, then you're only listed as having one day off, and you can get paid for that day off. But if you only take one day, you can't get paid for that day, no matter what. Even if you have sick time coming, you have to take 2 days in a row in order to be paid one day. But you're only paid for one day. Now,
that
if you want to get
amazing.
Paid for both days, you can use personal time or vacation time. So it's just, it is amazing.
Yeah, well, it is rigged so that they don't have to pay out any more than they...
It is.
Squeeze out penny by penny, yeah.
Of course, some people are so worried about losing their job that even though this policy is in effect, they won't take more than one sick day. So they never can be paid for that day, no matter what.
Yeah. And it just doesn't, it seems more cost effective not to let your whole workforce become sick, make customers sick.
It does. It does.
Which is exactly what happens.
And what I keep thinking was, at the time that I worked at the store, there was a local restaurant, a popular local restaurant that had an outbreak of illness among its customers. And it was traced back that some of its employees had the flu. And so it had just been spread, and the restaurant had to close down and had to do a thorough cleaning, had to do this whole public relations thing to assure people that it was safe to eat at the establishment. All this because an establishment basically didn't have policies that would let its employees take sick leave.
Yeah.
So you'd think that places would think of these sorts of things.
Yeah,
but
why would they public health policy would get involved with this kind of philosophy,
yes,
you know?
I wonder if we did truly have mandatory paid sick days and sick days set up like you and I would think of sick days, where if you take one day off, you get paid for one day off.
Exactly.
I wonder if we had a national policy that might be better for people.
Yeah. Well, talk to us also about the health insurance that's offered to some of these employees at Big Box. You say some of them have $5,000 deductibles on them.
Yes.
I mean, people with good incomes couldn't afford that, let alone people earning $8 an hour.
Yeah, which is what I had because it's all I could afford, and it's all a lot of people had because that was all they could afford. That way, it did amount to something that was cost effective. I was only paying $10 every 2 weeks for the coverage, which I figured was worth it in case I got some catastrophic illness.
Right.
But it does make it difficult for people, and this is, I think, also a cost-saving device for the company. There were also other things, some of them probably fairly good in the end, but I think they were cost-cutting for the company, like a nurse's call-in line, so you wouldn't go to the doctor, you'd call the nurse first, which can be useful, but I do think it was in place just to save the company money. And
public health policy has to get involved in some of this.
I think so.
Because people who can't get preventative medicine. yes. because of those deductibles and are going to, and we're going to have sick populations.
Yeah, and so many of the people who were working there were diabetic.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that in the book.
And they had a horrible time controlling their blood sugar levels because their schedules were so helter-skelter. It was very difficult for them to get on a routine, and their doctors would tell them, you know, you should have a set time when you have lunch. Well, you know, you might work a morning shift one day, and then 2 days later, you're working a night shift. So you really couldn't.
It's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, your book was real eye-opener. Some of this stuff I had not considered. Going back to what you were talking about before, the dichotomy of the people who work in big box, the stereotype is people who live in trailer mm-hmm. parks who don't have even high school degrees. Mm-hmm. But you talk about how there are lots of college grads.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, and there are the lower income working poor.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to me. Well, why do you think that is? Is it because of the economy?
It may be because of the economy. A lot of people, especially the older women, were there just because they couldn't make ends meet on Social Security mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. whatever field, if they had worked outside of the home, whatever field they had worked in, they probably did not have as much money. And I think that probably would carry over even if you look at a professional women, because professional women still really do not get paid as much as men, yeah. and they don't have as many opportunities for advancement. So I think a lot of it is the economy, a lot of it is our whole setup, the way that pensions are deteriorating now. Almost no one has a pension anymore. Social Security is barely keeping up.
Yeah, they're pinching pennies on people, too. And it's true that, I mean, big box stores, I've noticed just going into any one of them, it's almost generally a women's workforce, mm-hmm. right? It's generally women working
in
those places. Oh, God. You know, the answer to that argument that those with less education should get less pay, I mean, it flies out the window when you talk about all the people, including you, who had a college degree and had to work in these low-paying jobs.
It does. And there were some people who were on the sales floor who had doctorates, and they just happened to be in retirement. The one I'm thinking of is a man, and so he had a good enough income, but to supplement his income, he enjoyed retail work, and so he went to work at Big Box. And I think he ended up not being very happy with it, even though he liked retail work, because it isn't a very conducive environment to letting you go ahead and just work with your customers and give good customer
yeah.
service.
And you talked about the lack of trust in regard to letting people use their creativity.
Yeah.
And in any kind of self, you know, motivation was not encouraged.
Yeah, and I think that's a mistake, because you had very creative people, people who cared very much about their customers and about the job they did, and people also who were from the community and knew their customers. So they would know that a particular display would appeal to a customer. They would know that a customer in that area might be looking for some particular thing. I even found, just with age, people would come to me and ask for a whisk broom, and I knew what a whisk broom was, and the younger people had no idea
yeah.
So if you gave your employees a chance, they could really make the whole shopping experience a lot better for the customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the management does not want anybody else to be in control. That's part of it. Is that not true?
Apparently not, mm-hmm. Which is really sad. And of course, what that does is it does give you a sense that you don't have control. And I think study after study shows that when you're unhappy in the workplace is mostly when you don't feel like you have control. And then add to that that you aren't being paid very well and that you don't have good benefits, and it really makes a poor situation.
Yeah. To talk to us about the guy that worked at your big box who was the janitor. That was a very touching story.
Oh, yeah. I just love this guy, and everybody loved this guy. Really, really funny guy with a great sense of just sense of himself and sense of putting everything in perspective. He was a little bit of a conglomeration of people, because I did combine characters and I did change details to try to protect the people I worked with. So he was a little bit of a combination, but at the heart of him was a guy who had tried some other things and just didn't really like them, and so settled into a custodian position and just worked extremely well with people and had a great sense of humor about everything he had to deal with, and just just made life a lot better
but even it's a compilation, the guy had a degree too, right, in science or something?
I think a compilation, I'm not sure about the one person who was at the heart of it. I know that he had studied the culinary arts and had considered doing catering and had ended up not. But, you know, and the point really is that this guy was, I mean, smart and creative and funny and, you know, no dummy. And the stereotype, I think, is your janitor just doesn't know anything. Well, there are a lot of janitors out there with a lot to offer.
If you're just joining me, my guest is Tracy Kinney. She's the author of On Sale, Employers Get Good Workers Dirt Cheap. It's about her experience working at a big box store for several years. You know what I find really unbearable about this whole issue is the fact that these people, these working, hardworking people, mm-hmm. end up having to go to food pantries, having to use food stamps. So talk to us about that. How prevalent was that?
It was actually pretty prevalent, surprisingly prevalent, especially people with children. They just couldn't make ends meet, and so they would need the food stamps. And if their children were young enough, under five, they would also receive WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, a federal program, which has, I have some issues with WIC myself, just because I think it pushes certain, it's supposed to be a nutritional program, but I think it pushes certain foods on people, and I think it has more to do with various lobbies sometimes than it does with actual nutrition and actual science.
Yeah.
People did a lot. They had to go there. They would go to the secondhand stores. There was a local, a little downstairs store where people would bring in things and donate at a church, and so they would go there because they could pick up clothes for like a dollar for a pair of jeans or something, and that's where they would shop because they couldn't even afford the big box clothes.
Yeah. Well, what's the policy for people who work there, though? Do they get discounts? Do they get any kind of discount on food for their lunch breaks? How does that work?
Well, they get a 10% discount on certain items, and it was this complicated thing which did not include most food items. So it meant that basically people were encouraged to have to buy their lunch at the place and get no discount for it. And of course, especially if they were buying the prepared foods that had a little delicatessen, those were actually fairly high price.
Mm.
If they could get a frozen dinner, they could get a cheap one, but the really cheap dinners, of course, were loaded with sodium and were just not very good.
Yeah, loaded
for
with fat and sodium, and some of them with sugar, yeah.
Yeah, so they could get a small 10% discount on some items. If items were on clearance, they couldn't get a discount on them. And there was no clothing allowance or anything like that. You did get paid for training, although you didn't really have that much training. The training wasn't all that good. There was a lot of computer-based training, but it was kind of iffy. And so that, I think, was a problem because if people were really invested in and well-trained, I think things would just work better. They would be happier. The customers would be happier.
So they gave you no allowance for clothing, but you do have to sort of wear a uniform, right?
Yes,
everybody wears
did.
Black
you
pants
had,
or khakis,
it was,
whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, it was tan to brown bottoms, no shorts. There was a length for the skirt. It couldn't be more than 3 inches above the knee. Most people wore pants. I was one of the few people who wore skirts a lot because I thought they were more comfortable. But I also didn't have to work on a ladder very often. If I'd had to work on a ladder, I would have worn pants.
So it's just up to you to buy these clothes that
it's
are,
up
that
to
are
you to
mandatory.
Buy the clothes. And the tops had to be either a royal blue to navy. Most people wore navy. And if you wore, and you had to have closed-toed shoes, if you wore the wrong shoes, tops, anything, you could be told to go home and change on your own time, and also probably receive a reprimand for having clocked out early without permission.
Oh my God.
Or you could buy the clothes at the store and change into them. And sometimes this would happen even though the store would run these promotional fundraisers where, like a lot of places have, if you wear jeans on a Friday and you pay a dollar, it goes to, in this case, it was to a local children's hospital. So people would do that almost every Friday, and then all of a sudden there would be a Friday when they didn't have this policy instated. So they try to tell everybody who was there on Thursday, we're not doing that on Friday. If you come in, you'll have to go home and change.
Oh, and they do everything they can to undermine.
Really. And so if someone, there were people who would come in on Fridays, and they would be in the jeans thinking they could pay their dollar and support the children's hospital, and they were told they had to go home and change. And they actually did. This would also happen sometimes when you were adding shifts because you were trying to pick up hours, that they wouldn't get it in the computer for you, and then they wouldn't have you on the schedule, and so you would have to contact a manager, and it was the manager's discretion whether they would let you stay or not. And that happened to me one day, and the manager was hesitant, and I was just said, you know, if he says that I have to go home and I can't be paid, I'm going to say, I'm going home and I'm never coming back. I'm quitting now. And
I can understand
whether he
that.
Heard my thoughts yeah. or not, he let me stay. But it was just
so there's
absurd.
Absolutely no humanity involved in these stores. That's so unbelievable.
Very little.
In these stores that reap so much money.
For
the owners and then the stockholders.
Now, you would sometimes get a manager. It was at the discretion of the manager. You would sometimes get a manager who was more understanding, who would not send somebody home if they wore jeans by mistake on the Friday when it wasn't a children's hospital day.
Yeah.
And you would get some people who would be understanding. And when I went ballistic and quit, finally. They let me leave saying that I was leaving for personal reasons and I was eligible for rehire. And they actually gave me, I think it was 2 hours extra on my pay for that day. So there was leeway, and some people would actually be concerned. And my coworkers, after I left, several of them called me at home to make sure I was okay. Mm. So
well, how do most people leave, though? I mean, so they said that you could be rehired. If somebody quits, do they give them a bad mark on their?
It depends. Some people, they did. They did if they didn't quit giving a certain amount of notice. Others, a lot of people did just give up and leave.
Oh, I can
imagine.
I think
they tried as much as they could to give notice and do the right
and
thing.
And conform to the robotic world that they found themselves in.
People just got worn out.
I can imagine.
It's hard to describe how exhausting it was working 6 days a week while often you're going backwards. The store wasn't doing so well, so you didn't get your bonuses every quarter, and the bonuses weren't a large amount, but they would be enough that they would help you. And so without those bonuses, just on the hourly pay, and when your hours were being cut because the store wasn't doing well, people were sliding backwards. I was on track my last year there to make less than I had the previous year.
That's unbelievable. Let's talk about the fact that big box stores have notoriously discouraged any kind of unionizing, any kind of change. So what would you say after 4 years in this experience? How can we change this?
I think that you do have to have stronger unions, and I think some of the proposals that have come along to let people join unions easier would help. I think a lot of national changes. I think we should have a national single-payer, government-paid health care like there is in Europe.
Oh, absolutely.
That just plain covers everybody. And that way everybody is covered, and then businesses don't need to worry about this. It's not a problem for small businesses. It's not in the mix in big boxes. It's just not a problem. And I think that you do need to have mandatory paid sick time for people. People with children especially were running into this problem because kids just get sick too quickly with no warnings.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people were fired because of that. So I think you need those sorts of things. And I think you do just need a climate where people are more aware of this, because these companies will always try to find the way around the regulations as much as they can and try as much as they can to make it look like it's the regulation that's causing the problem for people. Mm. I remember workers who would say, well, I wish the state just wouldn't get involved. It wouldn't be so difficult for us. And I thought, if the state weren't involved, it would be five times more difficult
that's
for you.
That's right. You wouldn't get any breaks.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have any time off.
No, and I was part of a settlement over breaks, because there was a class action settlement in New York against the company based on people not getting their breaks. And when I had come in, the company had mainly cleaned up its act and was mainly giving breaks. And there were only a couple of times when I hadn't gotten breaks. So I got the minimum amount. But other people who'd worked there longer got like three times more than I did, because there were many instances when they had missed breaks.
Oh, gosh, it's just unbelievable. It's insult to injury, you know. It's really something that needs desperately to be changed in this country. You call it a social justice issue.
I
agree with you on that. So we need to get all the different fronts together to try to make changes.
I think so. I really think so.
Yeah. You called it low wages create a culture of slave labor, which was a great line.
That, actually, and that wasn't mine. That was one of my good friends who I was telling her, I was describing to her some of these things. And she said, well, you know, this is what it is. It's slave labor. And I thought, you know, that's perfect. And so I happened to be writing at the time, and I wrote that right in there. So... Yeah. And actually, she's read the book, and she hasn't recognized herself in it.
Now, I suppose you didn't plan to become a citizen journalist when you started this adventure in big box land.
I didn't, but boy, I'm glad I did.
What made you decide to write about your experience?
Well, actually, it was another good friend. I'm blessed with some really good friends. Mm. And it was another good friend who we had worked together at a newspaper for years, and she had left to take care of her children. And so we kept getting together for walks about once a month, and we continued this over a number of years. And so I was working at Big Box, and I would tell her about it, and she would say, you have to write about this. You have to write about this. I hope you're taking notes. You have to write about this. And so it took about 3 years, but I finally decided I do have to write about this. I really do. And I think of it almost as participatory journalism.
It is. Yeah.
Well, you could argue that it's not, because I combine characters and because I did change details. So, strictly speaking, you could argue that it's not. But the root of what's happening out there, these are real stories.
Yeah, and you had the real experience. And you're a journalist.
I remember thinking that when I was in journalism school, is that that's like the best journalism to do. That's just the greatest thing, is to do participatory journalism. And I bet I will never get a chance to do anything like that. And in a way, I have. It's like a dream come true.
Were you influenced by Barbara Ehrenreich's Nickeled and Dimed?
I mean,
that's the touchstone to all of us,
yes,
from where that began.
Yes, I was. And she has now, I don't know if your listeners have seen, but she has a website from this spring, economichardship.org, where unemployed journalists and underemployed journalists are writing about economic hardship.
Yeah,
and there have been some great stories on there.
Yes, I've seen them, and she's also on Facebook, people. Anybody wants to friend her, I became friends with her on Facebook. So, tell us about your blog. We only have a couple minutes left. You have a blog called Beyond the Newsroom?
Yes. Well, I started the blog when I published the book as a way to just bring attention to these issues and also to expand a little bit beyond just those issues. I made it broader so that it's social justice and environmental issues, because I'm also concerned with environmental issues. So I try to just, it's pretty personal. I try to just touch on ideas that I have, examples that I see, things that come up in life.
Mm-hmm.
One of my recent posts was my neighbor who stopped, and he's telling me that the big box manager just married his grandson, and you know, he's very proud, and we're standing there, and he said, oh, you don't work there anymore, and he's surprised, and I'm thinking, and I'm standing right beside my make minimum wage a living wage yard sign, and I'm thinking, have you noticed the sign I'm standing beside? Might there be any correlation?
That's interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we are almost out of time. Tell us about some events that might be coming up in the next couple months.
Yes. I have an author's talk, which is combined with a Walmart at 50 celebration this summer, since Walmart is one of the primary big box stores and is the largest private employer in the world. That's going to be at Buffalo Street Books, 6:30, Wednesday, August 1st. It's co-sponsored by Buffalo Street Books and by the Tompkins County Workers Center.
Great.
So I have that upcoming, and then also the end of this month, July 27th, which is a Friday through the 29th, I'll be at the Syracuse University Book Fair, since I'm a grad. And that's in conjunction with the Downtown Arts and Crafts Festival in downtown Syracuse.
Great. And also, real quick, any way people can get in touch with you?
Oh, through my website, of course. It's TracyKinneyBooks.com. TracyKinney.com.
Great. Well, Tracy Kinney, thank you so much for joining us. Again, the book was called On Sale, Employers Get Good Workers Dirt Cheap. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.